State of Hawaii is now reconvened.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 14-780, Waldecker v. O'Scanlan. Arguing for petitioner, Michael A. Glenn. Arguing for respondent, A.W. Ju. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Glenn and Ms. Ju. Are you both ready to proceed today?
Yeah.
All right. And Mr. Glenn, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning with 10 minutes to go, and we will give you a warning with 10 minutes as well, Ms. Ju. Mr. Glenn, please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mike Glenn. I represent the petitioner mother appellant Anastasia Waldecker, who thanks you for considering her case this morning. May it please the court. There are two essential issues for this court to decide. First, is it possible for provision of the property settlement agreement entered in Nevada that automatically awards sole physical custody of the minor child to the other parent if, at any time, one parent chooses to live anywhere but Oahu or San Francisco? Is it possible for that provision to officially result in the automatic change of physical custody of a Hawaii minor, absent any judge's finding that the change of custody is in the child's best interest? This couple's property settlement agreement in Reno, Nevada, 2010 contained a stipulation that automatically changes custody of their minor child upon a parent's future relocation without any requirement that the change made be in the best interest of the minor.
And your client signed that, and she was represented by counsel, right?
Correct. It was enforced, even though mother adamantly opposed it, presented argument as to why it's not in the child's best interest, did not believe that the custody change would be the child's best interest.
Actually, originally, it was your motion to change custody.
There were two motions, Your Honor.
Right. One, you filed a motion, and then they filed a motion to enforce 2 days before your...
Almost simultaneously.
Right.
Your cross motions.
Right.
Secondly, can the Intermediate Court of Appeals case law trump clear and specific Hawaii revised statutes and court rules? The fact that the guiding principle of family courts in awarding custody under Hawaii law is the best interest of the child is not deniable.
Is there a provision in our statute, our best interest, which says that best interest doesn't apply if a property settlement from another state says that custody is automatically going to switch if somebody moves?
No, not at all. In fact, it's the opposite. The law says any stipulation to change custody has to be shown to be in the child's best interest before it can be approved.
So we could have two identical parents with exactly the same situation. One has that kind of provision that's in this case. One doesn't have that provision, and they go in front of the family court, and the child custody award is going to depend on a non-best interest of the child criteria.
If you follow the lower court's reasoning, yes. In any event,
on the other hand, Mr. Glenn, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but following Justice Pollack's point, looking at the Nadeau case and the basic proposition of whether, as part of the settlement of the divorce decree, there can be a negotiation about future circumstances pertaining to custody, I'm interested in your view as to the utility of doing such a thing if, whenever a motion to modify is brought, such a clause becomes meaningless and there's simply a revisiting of the idea of custody and what's in the best interest of the child.
Well, that would make a good point, Your Honor, if Nadeau applies. If the Roth and Nadeau were similar to the facts of this case, we wouldn't be here today. But I'll explain later that that's not the case.
Are you considering a scenario in which it would be a useful exercise to negotiate what the process would be in the future in terms of custody if there was a change that, I guess you could call it a meaningful change, that has to do with one of the parents moving outside of the original site of the divorce?
I'll make your answer in the form of a scenario. Let's assume that the Waldocker and O'Scanlan were getting divorced in Hawaii. And at the time of their divorce, Mrs. Waldocker knew she was going to be marrying a new husband, and that new husband was active duty military, and that new husband had change of duty station orders and had to leave Hawaii. In that scenario, during the terms of their discussions, or litigation, or however you want to put it, everyone would know Mrs. Waldocker is going to be moving with the child, or hopefully with the child soon. That'd be part of the discussion, that'd be part of the debate, that'd be part of the litigation, and the resulting decree or order would take that into account. And let's pretend that Mrs. Waldocker was told, you can't leave with your child, even though we know your husband's moving. And then, a few months later, decided, I need to file a motion to amend custody because my husband's leaving and I need the child. The law of the case makes that exceedingly clear. You can't litigate that. It has nothing to do with change of circumstances, and has everything to do with that's already been decided. It's res judicata. As I'm going to illustrate, that didn't happen at all, ever, in this case.
Can the parties, let's assume it's agreed to, and fair bargaining, can the parties negotiate a provision that's contrary to Hawaii law?
No, not at all. That's why we appeal.
You know, let's talk about NADO. It expressed agreement with a finding of fact that a person seeking a change of custody must show a material change of circumstances since the previous custody order and must show that a change of custody is in the best interest of the child. Obviously, there's no issue with respect to the best interest. But NADO cites to, and it says, 57146. It cites to Doe 7 v. Roe 7 and Vorfeld versus Vorfeld. Okay. Doe and Vorfeld are cases that actually deal with spousal support and or child support. 580.47C clearly says you have to have a change in circumstances to modify those, right? But then it also cites to 571.46. Where in 571.46 does it say you have to show a material change in circumstances in order for there to be a change in custody of a child? Where?
And what Justice McKenna was just referring to, it makes sense if you're talking about changing the financial award or the amount that of support that has been previously determined. It makes sense to require a change in financial circumstances. But to require a change in circumstances when you're determining what the best interest of the child is contrary to the law. That's
I wholeheartedly agree, Your Honor.
And it's not once in the law, right?
Pardon?
It's not once in the law. It's in 571.46.1, and it's in 571.46 as well.
If I may, Your Honor, there's a reason why I said that the best interest is the guiding principle. It's the only principle. And that's because our state legislature has made this point abundantly clear in the statutes. 571-46, its title alone says, criteria and procedure in awarding custody and visitation, semicolon, best interest of the child. Doesn't say change circumstances. Goes on A1 to say, in actions for divorce, in awarding the custody, custody should be awarded to either parent or to both parents according to the best interest of the child. Then it goes on at 471.46.6 to make it very clear. Any custody award shall be subject to modification or change whenever the best interests of the child require or justify the modification. It doesn't say if there's been a change and then you can get the best interest. It says whenever and if the best interest justifies. That's the law all courts of this state are required to uphold and support.
And actually, as I indicated, you actually filed a motion to change custody based on various factors. You asserted, you know, improper parenting. You also asserted that there was a, that
mother was pregnant.
Mother had gotten married and was now pregnant. And then, you know, she also wanted to move. But the court based its decision totally on NADO.
Correct.
And another ICA SDO that they said was precedential,
yeah,
although it is not precedential.
I agree completely. The matter before Your Honors today, there was no present agreement between the parents that father could receive sole physical custody if mother moved away from Hawaii. The family court's ruling in this matter, however, and this is important, the lower court's rulings cannot be valid if they are solely based on the stipulation entered into in Nevada.
That was my question. Now, does it matter, Mr. Glenn, that this was a stipulation as opposed to if it had been litigated in Nevada and that was the child custody arrangement that
I'm
was already?
Saying that. It may have some nuances, but for the purpose of my argument, no, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, so if the court in Nevada, after a full trial, had entered a provision similar to the one here regarding what would happen with custody if one of the parents were to relocate, your position is that would be not entitled to any deference or that there would have to be, that it would not in any way govern in this case? It would just be anew looking at the best interests of the child?
Well, first you have to look at how they could have done that. Remember, in this case, everyone was residing in Nevada. No one even lived here. And what they said was basically that the parties might initially move to Hawaii. Okay? So if they had said, like I said in my initial scenario, that they know one of the parents is going to be leaving shortly, or in the case of Nadeau, both parents were going to be leaving, and that they took into account that order, and then one of the parties says, well, wait a second, I want to fight for custody again, the court would rightfully say, no, we took that into account in our first order. No court in Nevada is able to say, well, maybe the parents are going to move to Hawaii, and then maybe one of them might move from Hawaii or even San Francisco, more than 200 miles away from either of those places. And at that point, without any consideration of whether dad's become a heroin addict or who knows what, automatically custody is going to change. Now, we're not allowed to determine whether that change is best because that change was accounted for, therefore there's no change in material circumstances. Therefore, forget the guidance.
If I could, Mr. Glenn, I thought the court, one of the arguments here was that there was a material change in circumstance. The father had become a bad parent, and the trial court rejected those arguments, and you didn't challenge those findings.
He didn't reject them, Your Honor. What he said was because there's a two-step process. In other words, they took form over function. The lower courts have said, first, you must establish a change of circumstances. Then and only then will that change be looked at to see whether a change of custody is best. So the lower court said because there's no change, because the relocation was accounted for in the decree, we're not going to get the best interest. That's why.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Mr. Glenn, but your voice is very strong, which is good because we're trying to record it. You don't have to. But, you know, I thought that one of the arguments that you made was that this father, Mr. O'Scanlan, had become a bad parent, that he was, you know, not taking care of the child, the house was dirty, she was going to school.
Lice in her
hair, duty,
yes.
And it seemed like the trial court entertained that and just concluded that, in fact, it rejected it. So I'm not sure that it's correct to say that the trial court precluded any evidence regarding material change of circumstance. His point of view was that the move itself, standing alone, was not a change, but it seemed open to entertaining this argument that the father had become a bad parent.
They said automatically custody changes. That's the decree. We can't not enforce it. That's what happened.
Can we talk about this hearing that took place where, reading the transcript of the hearing, nobody testified such that there was cross-examination. Is that right?
I did not get to cross-examine the father. It was denied by the court.
And you asked to put on a witness, the mother, I guess, of your client.
We had offers of proof. I'm not sure if you're familiar how it works on motions stay at the family court, but you get 10 motions, you get 3 hours to hear them, and they'll give you the limited time they give you, and that's how it works.
So this whole trial, when I looked at it, or motion, it was determined on offer of proofs. In fact, there was objections to hearsay and offers of proof.
Right.
And so the court made its determination based on offers of proof, arguments, and statement of the parents, which were the least of all the things that were put forward in the case.
Really, the court made its determination on the Nadeau rule, that there must be a change before you can change custody. They found no change. and therefore they didn't even get into whether there was best interest to change.
So in other words, if you can't show a change, take a situation where you have two parents who are doing okay with the, but you can't show a change, but it would obviously be more detrimental to one of the child to follow through, it doesn't matter.
Right. That's why the California cases I cited show that a rigid application of the changed circumstances rule, since it's not really a statute, is detrimental, it's unworkable, and it can be harmful to the child.
Because there's really no limit. I mean, in this case, as I, you alleged certain things that you considered a material change, assuming a material change was required, including the, you know, the remarriage, the fact that there was going to be another child born, the allegations regarding unclean living situations, the allegations regarding, you know, 1 week off, 1 week on was not really great in terms of the homework follow-up, and, you know, the allegations that the father had apparently forwarded emails to young women from Ghana regarding potential sexual liaisons, mistakenly forwarded it to his ex-wife, your client, and you know, allegations regarding him not actually being around and leaving the daughter to be often cared for by his sons and or his son's girlfriends. Whether or not any of this is true, you had various assertions, but the court seems to have said, you know, we're not going to hear, this is OSC day, we're not going to hear any witnesses, and then just basically ruled based on Nadal,
right,
without a trial.
You're exactly correct, Karen. The divorce in this case awarded the minor child to the parties jointly on a week-week schedule. The divorce went on to stipulate that sole custody would automatically be established in the non-relocating parent if a relocation occurred. Now, this modification is subject clearly to Rule 54.2, and the family court's refusal to consider the minor's best interest is wholly contrary to the court's actual duty to make sure that it's been shown that the modification is in the child's best interest as a precondition to its judicial approval. Now, Rule 54.2, the modification of judgments, custody, and visitation, says a proposed stipulation, and we argue that the provision in the divorce that said if either parent leaves one of these places, there's going to be a change.
But isn't that talking about the stipulation, whether there's a stipulation at issue here? Not that there was a stipulation before.
There is a stipulation
before.
Here.
Doesn't that rule govern situations in which there's a stipulation at issue now, a new stipulation?
There is, Your Honor. Stipulation in the divorce. Remember, the divorce awarded joint custody. Then the party stipulated that if anyone leaves, the other party automatically gets custody. Now, whether that stipulation occurred after the divorce or as part of the divorce is wholly irrelevant because the rules are clear. A proposed stipulation seeking to establish or amend provisions in a judgment or any order relating to custody or visitation of minor children will not be approved unless there is a showing that the proposal is in the best interest of the child.
Well, let me bring you back to the discussion you were having, Mr. Glenn, about the provision of this particular stipulation incorporated in the settlement agreement that pertains specifically to the circumstances being anticipated where one of the parents moves. Now, I understand that in this case you're saying that there was an error because the court didn't consider the best interest of the child. But what I'm reaching for is, so what do we do with this provision? Are you contending that it's contrary to public policy to try to deal with that very common set of circumstances in a settlement agreement? And if not, how do you recommend that the court treat that? Is it just one thing to be considered co-equal with subsequent circumstances that occur?
Thank you, Your Honor. That's a great question. In this case, you used the word anticipated. Remember, it was never anticipated anyone would leave Hawaii. Never. They didn't even know they were going to live in Hawaii. This happened in Nevada.
So what I hear you saying is that you would apply a sort of standard that says, is the action before the court in the motion to modify, is that action the action that was anticipated in the settlement agreement? Is that the
Your Honor,
basic analysis that you're proposing?
I would refer you to Montenegro versus Diaz, which makes a good analysis of this case. When it says is, once it has been established that a particular custodial arrangement is in the best interest of the child, the court need not reexamine that question. So what we have to ask ourselves is, did this case have a judicial determination that if any party at any time, whether it could be 6 or 16, moves 200 miles from Oahu or San Francisco, that either parent is going to automatically get custody? Is that a judicial determination of best interest, or is that just the parties?
Well, that was exactly my question to you before. I asked whether it mattered that this was a stipulation or a trial, and you said it didn't. Now, I think I'm hearing you make a different point.
Because if a judge found that ruling, if the judge said, you guys can't agree, so I'm going to make this ruling. If either party, it's anticipated that one of you is going to leave. So if you leave, you give up custody, just like Nadal, just like Turoff. Those cases both dealt with the judge knowing that the parent's going to leave. In fact, in the Turoff case,
Mr. Glenn, you may believe because of Nadal's holding that you're required to perhaps to argue that position, but I'm not so sure that whether one anticipates or not anticipates whether there's going to be a move, that can trump a family court's statutory requirement to determine best interest. In other words, it doesn't matter whether or not it's anticipated, because what we're doing by making these kinds of conclusions, by saying whether or not it's anticipated, we're trying to control what people do in the future.
I agree completely. So what we're dealing with here is Rule 54.2 makes it very clear that before the judge can say custody will change, there has to be a finding of best interest. Nowhere in any of the documents in this case has any judge in any state ever said what's best for the kid.
Mr. Glenn, can you, I didn't quite understand your answer to Justice Wilson's question. How do we encourage agreements between parents regarding custody and possible custody changes in divorce settlements if everything is thrown open?
Nothing is thrown open. If the parties want to agree.
As they did here.
No, they didn't here. All the parties agreed to here was if either parent at any time leaves either Oahu or San Francisco, the other party gets custody. That's not if I leave Hawaii within a year, you get custody. That's the kid could be 17 years old on pursuant to this term, if we were to hold this term enforceable. And if mother moved to a certain side of the Big Island, because it's about 200 miles away.
So what's your answer then? Does it depend on the time? Does it depend on the geography? How is it that parties can make agreements regarding custody if it can be revisited any time there's a change?
It can't be revisited any time there's a change.
Okay, what's your answer to that?
My answer is this. It cannot be revisited any time there's a change. There has to be a significant change. And that change has not to have been dealt with in the decree. Now, what the court told us, and the family court told us was, we understand that relocation is always a material change of circumstances. In fact, in Hawaii, we're so geographically remote that it has to be considered a change. However, if that change is mentioned in the divorce, then there's no change of circumstances. And those are related to the Nadal and the Turoff case, where there clearly was an anticipation of leaving Hawaii mentioned in all the negotiations and litigation. That was never the case here. No one even lived in Hawaii, let alone anticipated leaving Hawaii.
But what about, like in Nadru, help me with the pronunciation.
Nado,
okay. That's helpful, thank you. In Nado, there were allegations that the relationship had developed after the divorce decree in a way that would have meant it was in the best interest of the child to spend more time with the father. You know, there were allegations that would suggest that there were changes that maybe weren't anticipated. And you had made that point about what happens as the child gets older. So it's a a challenge to try to understand the extent to which you're proposing you can negotiate what the proper result is when there is going to be a change of circumstances anticipated as the parent moving.
Remember, the word anticipation is improper in this case. No one ever anticipated leaving Hawaii. It wasn't part of the case.
Well, evidently someone anticipated that possibility at least coming up. Why? They must have anticipated living in either place. Do we even know that? Does the record reflect that?
And that's the key. Either place. Was it San Francisco or Oahu? Which parent? What age? Who knows? How can anyone say that a judge has given the stamp of judicial approval, finding that that's in a child's best interest, when there's so many unknowns?
Well, that comes back to this being a stipulation, but also the record not, in your view, adequately explaining what was in the parties' minds at the time they entered into it? Is that your position?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
The record really shows what was in the parties' minds when they entered into it by looking at the testimony of Father in his memorandum in support of his motion. He makes it very clear, Your Honor, how come this language was put into the decree. If I could find it real quick. It wasn't really addressed by the lower courts other than to say that everyone was an adult, they had legal counsel. But the reality of the situation is, according to Father's own words, I offered money and a vehicle to help Anastasia escape Todd if she agreed never to take Leilani away from me again. Anastasia agreed that if I helped her, she would agree to special relocation, custody, and school provisions in the divorce decree. That's how this happened. We have an older person with a young Russian bride saying, sign this if you want money. I don't think that lends itself well to saying that there's a judicial termination of the best interest or consideration between the parties, especially given the unequal bargaining power of the parties. I see my time is up.
All right, Mr. Glenn, we'll hear from you in rebuttal, and now we'll hear from Ms. Jew.
Chief Justice and Associate Justices, I'm Debbie Jew. I'm representing the appellee, John O'Scanlan. One of the questions that the court did ask is whether it was contemplated in the decree at the time that the parties would be moving. The decree itself, the property settlement that was incorporated into the decree, indicated that it is contemplated.
Why is a child included in a property settlement agreement?
Well, I think it was labeled property settlement. However, if you look at the settlement itself, it had provisions regarding the custody provisions, visitation provisions, and then what happened is the court incorporated it into the decree.
Okay. And in terms of the decree, I don't see anything in the decree in which the Nevada judge found that whatever was in the property settlement agreement was in the best interests of the child.
What we have to look at is once the settlement agreement is incorporated into the decree, it loses its separate existence as a settlement agreement, and it becomes part of the court order. And by adopting that settlement agreement, that if essentially what the court is finding that the party's agreement is in the best interest of the child.
It doesn't say so, though.
It doesn't say that, but.
Is that a lifetime finding? In other words, is that a lifetime finding? The judge making this, they have this stipulation, and so it's lifetime finding that it's the best interest of the child that if any parent leaves from Oahu, then the other parent gets custody.
It is a lifetime finding until you prove that there has been a material change in circumstance. Because the best
Can you show me where that is in our statutes that govern best interest? I'm specifically talking about 571.46.1 joint custody. It says any order for joint custody may be modified or terminated upon the petition of one or both if it is shown that the best interests of the child require modification or termination. It doesn't say anything about substantial change in circumstances.
The statute does not say anything about material change in circumstance. That is by case law, that is how the
court. Doesn't it seem like the case law conflated 580 47C requirements for change in circumstances for child support and spousal support and somehow tacked it on to changes in custody also? I don't see anything in the statutes that require a change in circumstances for child custody. It's always best interest of the child. I mean, my gosh, what would be a material change in circumstances? But even just time itself, are we saying that you have to show a material change? I mean, right. This decree was 4 years old. Are we saying that if it was 10 years old the decree says you could never change custody?
Well, the decree does not say you never can change custody. You can change this custody, but you have to start with the underlying premise that once the order is entered, the underlying premise is that the custody order that is in place is in the best interest of the child. And therefore, because it is already in the best interest of the child, you need to show a material change in circumstance to indicate that that provision is no longer in the best interest of the child. That's why
So traveling, exercising your constitutional right to travel isn't sufficient. We have U.S. Supreme Court law that says that a citizen has a right to travel between states. So this provision, in a sense, takes away from that constitutional protection that all citizens have.
It does not take away in this sense. The mother is still free to travel.
If she travels, she suffers. You know what the U.S. Supreme Court also says? It says, this right to travel encompasses the right to migrate, resettle, find a new job, and start a new life. Well, what happens here is she marries somebody in the military. So if you marry somebody in the military, or you want to start a new life, or you have a job opportunity, we're going to take your kid away. That's what the argument here is today.
Well, the mother can still travel. You look at the provision in the...
You don't think marrying someone in the military and being pregnant with another child isn't in and of itself assuming material change is required is not a material change?
It is a change, but whether it's a material change or not is going to be within the purview of the trial judge. And he did consider that argument, and he did find that based upon the circumstances here, it was in the best... Well, not in the best interest, that there wasn't a material change.
He apparently found that moving to getting pregnant, marrying somebody, and moving with the husband isn't a material change in circumstance. That's pretty astonishing to me.
Well, the thing is that the decree itself contemplated that one party or both parties may at some point move away, and the parties themselves agreed that in the event that happened, the best interest of the child would be to maintain the residence that had already been established, at the time...
Thank you for... And I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you want to finish your answer?
Which at the time the decree was entered into was that the parties contemplated that they would be moving to Oahu, but they also contemplated that in the event that one of them should move away beyond the 200-mile radius of Oahu or San Francisco, that in that event... the child would remain with the parent who is staying. And at that point, it's the child is in the best interest of the child to stay essentially where the resident is.
Wait, does the court say anything about this? I'm sorry.
Let me see if I can get some help on you completing your thought, which is that the best interest of the child has been defined. It is not necessary to take judicial resources. It is not necessary to go back into an acrimonious dispute in order to define what the public interest of the child is, because it has been provided for in the settlement agreement, correct?
That's correct.
But 571.46 makes clear that it's the court's duty to determine what's in the best interest of the child. So by providing this definition that you are, I think, focusing on, that is certainly very complete in this case, if you accept the proposition that condition of the settlement agreement defines, even as Justice Pollack is talking about, pregnancies in the future, enormous changes in the family in the future, whether it has to do with new children or new geographic locations. All of those things can be defined in the settlement agreement and taken out of the purview of the court in terms of its responsibility to define the public interest. Now, I may be misstating your position, but as you explained it, it seemed you were kind of arguing for the idea that the court's duty can somehow be taken over by the parties when they negotiate the divorce decree.
Well, when the parties are negotiating the divorce decree, they're negotiating what the status quo is at the time. I'm not sure if I'm understanding your question.
Okay, well, that helps, because as long as you're just saying it's the status quo at the time, then that opens it up after that for modification, and to some extent it really does diminish the importance of what's in the settlement agreement as time goes on. Well, maybe the agreement a week later would have some importance, but in any case, it's just something to be referred to, and if that's the case, why wouldn't there be error in the family court's part here? Because the family court seemed to have stated, as you did, that under Nadeau, it's been decided already. The court doesn't need to consider what's in the public interest of the child, because it's already been defined in the
decree that this is the best interest, and that's why to change that best interest that's already been determined, you need to show a material change.
Then let me ask you this. Could custody be subject to arbitration? Would an arbitration award on child custody be binding?
I think where the problem with an arbitration is, the family court is the one that is invested with the authority to make these custody decisions.
Where in the court's findings and conclusions does he say that it is in the best interest of this child that this stipulation be enforced?
The court does not use those exact words, that it's in the best interest of the child to enforce the current order. What the court does is it does the best, whether there's a material change in circumstance, because underlying it is a decree establishes the best interest custodial arrangement for the child.
So is it your position that even if the court should have conducted a best interest test, that in effect it did so?
Effectively, by looking at the claims of unfit parent, dereliction, degradation in the parental skills, the court did do the weighing, because as to each allegation that Ms. Waldecker brought up, Mr. O'Scanlan had evidence on his side, testimony on his side.
Excuse me.
That contradicted it.
Excuse me. But I thought it came up in the hearing. I think Mr. Glenn asked, he said usually in these kinds of things, there is like a custody evaluation. He specifically asked for that during the hearing. That I think he asked for it a couple times, right? And the judge said, no, we're not going to do that.
Well, that's within the discretion of the court as to whether it will or will not order a custody evaluation.
I see. So we had this situation with the most important determination being made about the child's future. We don't have people testifying with cross-examination. We don't have the traditional witnesses being called. We have a judge relying on offers of proof and argument, which the judge equates with the, it's even the way he evaluates what he relied on. And he makes a determination without a custody evaluation. And that's something we're supposed to rely on.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the transcript, there were offers of proof. But in addition, Judge Souza did ask specifically each party. For example, he asked Ms. Waldecker, why do you think Mr. O'Scanlan is unfit as a parent? And she gave her reasons why.
If I remember correctly, he asked her, and she said, I have so much to say if I was asked. And then here's someone who's Russian speaking, apparently, and her answer was three lines. And then they turned to the other person, who apparently doesn't have that concern, and was able to speak for pages. I'm not so sure that that's a really good way to determine the best interest of a child, by which parent is better to talk in court. and the custody evaluation that Mr. Glenn asked for, I don't know if the court wants to consider this and ask for a custody evaluator, that type of thing, to figure out.
Ms. Ju, you've relied on Nadeau, as did the trial court, Judge Souza. How can you reconcile the decision in Nadeau with the requirements of the statute?
Well, again, with Nadeau, you're starting with the premise that the best interest was decided by the court and the decree was issued with that in mind. So in Nadeau, it was contemplated that because of military service, someone would move. So the trial court did take that into consideration. And so when the actual move occurred, because it was already contemplated in the decree that this would be what would be best for the child in the event that a parent moved, that became the best interest for the child, and to show, and in order to change away from that finding, you had to show that there was a material change from the original decision of the court.
So there was a judicial determination of best interest of the child in Nadeau?
In Nadeau, it was a litigated case.
Okay, this is...
I mean before it was litigated. You mean it was litigated below before
correct.
The decree came down?
Correct.
Okay, and this case was a stipulation, so how come that's not distinguishable? Because in this case, you didn't have a judge independently other than signing the decree, making hearing evidence, having adversarial testing, and then making a finding that this provision would be in the best interest of the child, perhaps under some view of providing stability to the child, perhaps in view of understanding the parental or the family's conditions, that this might be in that child's best interest to have this kind of provision, so there'd be some certainty. But we don't have that kind of finding here.
We don't have that kind of finding, but what we do have is we have to look at how settlement agreements are treated. If they're incorporated by the court into a final order, it becomes res judicata. If there's any challenge to that settlement agreement, it has to be done before it is actually entered into as in final order.
Res judicata needs a little bit more than just a... And under the facts of this case, wasn't she also alleging that she was allegedly being blackmailed? Say, you know, he was telling her, if you don't sign this, you're not going to see Leilani. And the court asked, well, what kind of evidence do you have of that? And she says, well, my mom was with me. And Mr. Glenn is like, we have mother outside if you want to call her as a witness now, Your Honor. And the court is like, no, not on OSC day. So, like, I don't really care about, I'm not going to take the time to see if these allegations are true as to whether or not this agreement should be enforced.
And if I could also follow up on that, but do you want to answer the question, actually? I think you hadn't answered Justice McKenna's question. But.
With respect to that particular allegation, that was not even raised in the original declaration that was attached to the motion. In addition, if it were a problem in terms of the negotiations, the time that brought that up would have been immediately after the decree was entered, whether it would have been by post-decree motions or whether there would have been an appeal to the higher court in Nevada. That wasn't done. She waited until 4 years later, didn't even bring it up in the original motion and declaration, and only brought it up as part of her testimony when questioned by the judge.
Which is a similar point that was made in Nadeau, where the court said that there should have been an appeal from the decree if the terms were objectionable at that time. But I think more to the point of this idea of res judicata, or what Justice McKenna is referring to as a change that takes place after the decree, if you could help me with the language in 57146 that seems to some extent address this idea that you've mentioned, that the court could be locked in the future based on the nature of the language in the settlement agreement pertaining to relocation. So 57146A6 says the custody is subject to modification or change whenever it's in the best interest of the child. But then it continues and says, the same person who made the original order shall hear the motion or petition to modify. Now, that seems to anticipate that where you're talking about custody orders and a modification, that it's likely that there's going to be modification in the future. And it's important to go back before the same judge because presumably that judge isn't going to be locked in, right? It anticipates that maybe you need the same judge to make a determination about whether there's a change in circumstances. It wouldn't be as important to have the same judge if the point is that once a determination's made of custody, as defined in the custody decree, it stays that way. So that language seems to suggest that the interest of the child is a continuing interest, that the court has the duty to re-examine when the parties allege the need to do so.
And when that allegation is made, you have to go to the material change in circumstance analysis. And then if you reach that point...
That kind of test doesn't seem to be particularly difficult if you look at it in terms of defining a material change in circumstances in relation to the interest of the child. But you're suggesting that you can't get to the interest of the child from an independent determination by the court. The interest of the child is, or the material circumstances are locked in.
Well, the best interest is locked in the decree until you can show material change in circumstance.
Why doesn't that just beg the question? Okay, so if there's a... See, you're saying that you can't get to that point if the material circumstances are in the decree as to relocation. But that seems to be contrary to the purpose of the statute. Why not just say that when a material change can arise where there is an allegation of a problem that takes place after the divorce decree. It could be with respect to parenting, could be respect to financial interests.
And if those allegations are made, it is up to the trial court to determine whether factually there has been a material change in circumstances.
Okay, well, very good. Then in this case, the point is the judge didn't do that, didn't look at the factual circumstances because of his reliance on Nadreau and the language in his order that said that it was a relocation that was anticipated in the decree.
Correct, but he did look at best interest without using those words because, remember, the allegations was the change in circumstance was the bad parenting.
Excuse me, I think I reviewed the transcript. I don't remember very much testimony about what was going to be the living situation of the child, what kind of home, what kind of schools, things that normally would be done. Again, Your Honor, as far as the normal procedures in a relocation as to whether where is she going to be, have a custody evaluation. Again, the court didn't do it. There's virtually no testimony about what her living situation was going to be.
Well, there was no testimony as to what the new situation
exactly
was, if she were permitted to move to with mom. However, there was testimony as to what the living situation was currently in Hawaii.
But doesn't best imply a comparison?
Well, then the burden of proof to have shown the comparison that it would have been best to move would have been on the appellant, and that wasn't done in this case. They had the burden of proof in that.
But you've just said that the court just relied on the agreement because there wasn't sufficient change in circumstances. I mean, you can't have it both ways, I don't think.
Well, the court did rely on the agreement because the best interest was that have the child stay in its established residence, which is essentially what the decree did.
So are we tipping the balance? So the spouse who has financial means, the spouse who might be older, or the spouse who might have a certain kind of living situation or a stable job, that parent is going to be given if that's the agreement, the parent who moves for an education, who moves for a new job, to new life, new marriage, that parent is going to suffer.
Not necessarily, because when you look at some of the cases where there are arguments in terms of economic benefits of one parent versus the other, the court still looks at the quality of the parenting. And the quality of the parenting was addressed in this particular trial by offer of proof. So there was testimony in terms of how the child was doing well here. She was doing well in school. She had activities, extracurricular activities. She had friends here. Friends would come to the house and stay. So that was in the offer of proof. And so that evidence was presented. And the test, contrary to what Mrs. Waldecker was alleging.
We have a child who was doing well because the child custody was being shared. I don't think it should necessarily be advocated by you that the child doing well is based on one parent under the facts of this case.
Well, and the child is doing well in Hawaii because she has, what the evidence shows is she does have her roots here, she has her activities here, she has her friends here. She does well in school.
It may very well have been in the best interest of her to stay. The problem was there was no family court determination. The court never reached that determination.
But, and I suppose that your point about the record is one that may have more strength to it if some of these references to the actions of the parents after the divorce decree were the subject of the court's order. But in the court's order, there is this emphasis on the analysis of Nadeau and the specific finding that the court finds and concludes that under the clear terms of the divorce decree, modification of custody shall automatically occur, citing the provision which you have understandably emphasized, but says that changing to the other party remaining having primary physical custody of said minor child at the option of the remaining party. So the court was specifically making its decision, the family court in this case, quoting the language that you're emphasizing from the divorce decree. So to suggest that the court really made a decision based on something outside of the divorce decree doesn't seem to comport with the actual language of the conclusions of law.
Well, that was the conclusion of law that the court did make, but the other argument was that the parenting was a change in circumstance. So the court did a two-prong analysis, and its findings of fact indicated that that neither parent was derelict in how they raised this kid. Both took care of her needs.
You know, it's amazing.
I'm sorry.
No, you can finish. I thought you would stop.
I was referring to finding of fact 11 and 12.
Okay, but didn't the court at the end, I thought the court said it a couple times, the court said, this is a close call. And it was a close call only based on the evidence of her living situation here. But no, nothing about a custody evaluation on how it could have been somewhere else.
There wasn't, but at a minimum, there should have been at least that allegation or some evidence on the part of the appellant to show that where she's living somewhere else, what are the benefits? And then if you had that.
So we're going to require that one parent has to be bad, or one parent is not that great. We're going to have to find deficiencies and fault in order to allow someone to move with their child?
No. In this situation, you basically have two parents that are equal with respect to parenting. That wasn't the finding of fact.
But
really?
It wasn't in the conclusions of law. You've referred to findings of fact 11 and 12, but in the conclusions of law, it doesn't appear that the court is finding it in the best interest of the child under either 54.2 or under the language that specifically the court is, I assume, operating under 571.46. There doesn't seem to pertain to parenting as an issue. The conclusions of law, I'm just mentioning that to ask you if I'm missing something. If you see in the conclusions of law where the court has addressed the
because there was no
parenting
change
issue.
In circumstance, what you have is with your finding, the best interest is they were equal parenting.
No, the only finding is both mother and father love the daughter. There's no evidence that either parent will harm or be dangerous to the daughter, and the daughter is bonded to both mother and father. So there's nothing about which there being equal parenting. It's the daughter, they both love her, she's bonded to both, and neither one is dangerous to the other.
So they're adequate
dangerous
parents.
To her.
They're adequate parents.
And are you suggesting that that is the same as what's in her best interests?
It could be.
Okay, I'm just curious now. I'm assuming she's gone now?
She is.
The mother is gone?
Yes.
Okay. So now the child has been with the father for the last year or so, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So at this point, are you saying that at this point, if the mother filed a motion to change custody at this point, based on change of circumstances, the trial court would still have to just follow Nadeau and say, we're still in the best interest of the child, have nothing to do with it. We just go with whatever the stipulation said.
I think the corollary of this, that would be, unless you can show that remaining in Hawaii pursuant to the stipulation that has been incorporated into the decree is not in the best interest of the child, you have to maintain the status quo.
So this is a forever determination, essentially, of best custody.
Unless you can show material change in circumstance. But that's where the analysis changes. Is if you show new facts where it would show that it would be that situation has materially changed, that is no longer in the best interest of this child to remain in Hawaii with dad, the party who stayed and is the residential parent at this point, you would have to show that something has occurred that is so different that requires you to reassess the issue of custody again. But if the child is doing well under the terms of the decree, which presumes that it was in the best interest of the child when that decree was filed, then the custody should be pursuant to the terms of that decree.
So no problem with the constitutional right to travel, no problem to the constitutional right that this court has recognized that the interest of the parents in the care, custody, and control of the children is perhaps the oldest of the fundamental liberty interests recognized by this United States Supreme Court. It doesn't matter. All of it revolves around the agreement that was made in Nevada about where custody would be determined if somebody moved.
The decree does not prevent anyone from moving. So there is not.
There's a penalty. It's a pretty significant penalty.
Well, and when the parties entered into this agreement, they agreed that this child would stay in Hawaii with the parent who
And it trumps public policy and our statute and our constitution. That has to be the argument, it seems to me.
Well, and that argument has not been made by the appellants.
Anything to wrap up at this time, Ms. Ju?
Based upon case law and the statute, the family court should be affirmed because it was a final decision. And if you have a final decision as to custody, it is presumed that that is in the best interest of the child. And to keep the law of the case, unless you can show material change in circumstance, the court was correct in determining that there was no material change in circumstance and to enforce the provision in the decree that the child remain in Hawaii.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ju. Mr. Glenn, your rebuttal.
Thank you. Getting back to what Justice Pollack had mentioned earlier about joint fiscal custody in Hawaii revised statutes 571-46.1c. The significance in this case is that it involves modification of decree that awarded joint fiscal custody of a child. Now 571-46.1c specifies that any order for joint custody may be modified or terminated on the petition of one or both parents. Well, mother filed a petition saying, we've got joint custody, I want sole now. So it's possible to do this, and 57146.1c doesn't say if there's a material change of circumstances. It makes it very clear. It's any time that it's modified, it can be modified upon petition, and the court can even modify it if it's shown that the best interests of the child require the modification or termination. Now, the Intermediate Court of Appeals reasoning helps this court understand why that's so. Where joint custodial parents are deadlocked regarding an important decision implicating the child's future or welfare, such an impasse qualifies as a material change in circumstances sufficient to warrant the family court's consideration of a change in the custody order's terms with respect to the deadlock matter. Here, they're fighting for custody. You don't get more deadlocked than that.
What are you quoting?
I'm quoting Holloway, the ICA opinion from 2014. Now, what they say here is, and they go on to say, to not recognize this as a changed circumstance, or to not recognize it as an exception to the court's material change of circumstances doctrine, would prevent the family court from stepping in to act in the best interest of the child, where it is both specifically authorized by statute to do so, and potentially of great import for the child's well-being. That's exactly what happened here. There's joint custody. They want to change it. The court wouldn't even allow them to have that hearing because they put the rigid application of the changed circumstances rule into place. Remember, that rule doesn't exist in Hawaii. There's no such statute. There's no such family court rule. Every statute and every rule says the opposite. Best interest is the only thing to look at. And if the joint parents can't agree, then that's a change. The lower courts, including the ICA, drop the ball on that. They don't even mention how that comes into play. Let me help this court decide this case with an analogy, a hypothetical, if you will. Remember, mother filed this motion saying father's parenting skills have deteriorated since the decree. That's the change of circumstances. Child has lice in the air, she's unkept, she's just not being cared for properly. And now I want sole custody. If she had filed that, and she wasn't planning on relocating from Hawaii, the court would have to hear the motion. They'd have to hear evidence, they'd have to set up a trial, they'd probably put a custody evaluator in place, and the court would make a determination of whether, one, there's been a change, and two, whether changing custody satisfies the child's best interest. But because of the timing of mother's motion, meaning she not only filed for a change of custody, but she filed it when she thought that her husband was going to be relocated, the court had its hands tied. The court basically said, well, relocation is always a change of circumstances, unless it's mentioned in the decree. And of course, this decree mentions relocation.
As you take us through that scenario, and thinking back about your argument, I'm assuming that if the facts were a bit different, everything remained the same as in the original divorce decree, but it was just a geographic change. In your case, then, the divorce decree might cover the question of whether or not it's a material change.
I don't understand the question, sir.
Well, let's take away all the intervening points that you're making about parenting and just assume that there's a divorce decree that says that in the event that one parent moves and the custody reverts to the other parent, and then that parent moves, nothing, all other things being equal, then is that what you would consider to be a material change because custody is in dispute and that by itself constitutes material change?
If it's joint custody.
Yes.
If joint custody has okay. to be committed, but if it's sole yes. custody, let's say in the divorce, dad gets custody, and it says if dad leaves, mom can get custody. That's just like the Turoff case. The Turoff case.
Well, your conclusion based on the Turoff case is what?
Is that mother fought for custody within a year after the divorce that specifically said dad's going to be leaving, dad gets the job. So mother says, well, wait, I want to fight that again. So we already addressed what happens if dad leaves. So that's what happens here is law of the case, res judicata, has been morphed into some type of change circumstances, which doesn't translate easily in the warm and fuzzy world of child custody interpretation. How do you say something's not changed, as Justice McKenna pointed out, when everything changes? Everything changes in time.
And a court can't, parties aren't allowed to tie court's hands and say, we've decided what's best for our kid. We don't need your approval. We don't want your approval. In fact, if one of us wants to fight over it, you're going to be prevented from even considering their arguments. Because...
Is it your argument that automatically, as long as there's an issue of custody, there is a reason for the court to consider whether there has been a meaningful change in circumstances?
Automatically, a court must consider a change of circumstances in a normal case, meaning if it's been decided, if it's been evaluated, if it's been ruled on, you're not allowed a second bite at the apple. But if it hasn't been evaluated, if it's never been ruled on, if it couldn't have been ruled on, like in this case,
all right,
then of course it needs to be evaluated. But in the situation with joint custody, all it takes is a deadlock. All it takes is one parent to say, I disagree, we need to change this, it's not working anymore. And then the court has to look at best interest. But in this weird case, because the timing, as I said, if mother filed her motion without relocation, we'd have a trial, we wouldn't be here today. But because she wanted to change custody at the same time there was relocation, the lower court made it clear. The family court said relocation is generally a change of circumstances in custody cases, except where there's a provision in the decree that addresses it. Went on to say that the court finds and concludes there's no substantial material change of circumstances because of Anastasia's relocation to Florida. That's an error. You're taking a co-parenting situation, changing it to one parent. That's the biggest change you could ever have. He's not going to have her support anymore. The court made zero findings about, is this good? Is it bad for the kid? What's up? Remember, in this situation, I'm going to go to extremes. Father could have been a heroin addict and a child molester. Okay? Mother could have said, I want custody. Dad's a child molester. Dad's a heroin addict. Pretty sure any judge in the state would have said, yeah, you lose custody, sir. You're molesting your kid, you're a heroin addict. Unless, at the same time that happened, mother was relocated.
Well, Mr. Glenn, to be fair to the trial judge here, the trial judge entered findings regarding the quality of parenting that I understood, at least as I read them, appeared to be directly in response to the argument that he was no longer a fit parent. So it appears the trial court did consider the question of whether, because of his allegedly degraded parenting skills, there had been a change in circumstance, and entered findings, which you haven't, as I understand, challenged on appeal. So those findings are in the record. They're factually found in this case.
I disagree, Your Honor.
Okay.
In fact, I mentioned to the trial judge, what if he's a heroin addict? The judge said, well, that would be a change of circumstances. So he agrees that if he was a child molesting heroin addict, that change of circumstances would be enough. But the judge also said, what I'm called to determine, Mr. Glenn, in a post-degree motion regarding change of custody is, has there been a material change in circumstances since the last order was issued? So the relocation, he's saying, normally that's a change, but since it was mentioned, my hands are tied. Automatically, custody changes, well, even if he's a heroin addict, because we're not allowed to get the best interest. You can only go to what the party stipulated to back in Nevada, that at any future time, any parent leaves Oahu, and remember, or San Francisco. So this isn't about protecting the child's right to be in Hawaii. It's not. Otherwise, it wouldn't have said San Francisco. In fact, I leave it to your honors to figure out what would happen if mother moved to San Francisco. That's a whole other can of worms.
Well, Mr. Glenn, if you would, begin to wrap up your argument.
Thank you. Remember, the parties aren't allowed to tie the hands of a family court judge with a stipulation unless that stipulation is found, shown to be in the child's best interest. It didn't happen in this case. Couldn't happen because the judge wouldn't let it happen. The judge felt that NATO and Turoff and the change of circumstances rule had to be met before they can get the best interest. Found that it wasn't met and didn't allow arguments on that. What we need is not only reversal, but let's have a trial. Let's have a case where the judge can look at all the factors used to determine what's best for the child and make a ruling. Not say, well, because mother's leaving, that's it, you lose your child. And that is definitely not only a brief abolition of the right to free travel, but it's an onus. It's basically saying you're stuck with your ex. You're going to have to live 200 miles from your ex at all times or lose your child. If the state of Hawaii wants to put its stamp on that type of proposal, feel free. But I don't believe that's where we're going with this case.
Thank you very much to both of our attorneys. The court will take this matter under advisement.